committed to sharing cultural diversity through food. Welcome to El Paso Food Voices. Welcome. My name is Meredith E. Abarca. I'm your host for today's episode. El Paso Food Voices is committed to bring a lot of different kinds of stories and knowledge about El Paso. And today we have a wonderful guest that I've been wanting to have here for quite some time. She works at La Semilla Food Center, and her name is Merlin Yanez. She's been with the center, I think, for probably as long as I've known her, which is almost 10, 15 years. And today we're going to be talking about this wonderful organization called La Semilla, as I said, and she's going to tell us a little bit about who she is, how she got involved with this organization, and we will learn the multiple programs that I understand the organization has and how what its mission is and how the community community can get involved. So first of all, welcome to our show. It's wonderful to have you here. And I just would like to start just by telling us a little bit about who you are. Tell us, you know, are you native from El Paso? And what got you interested in food, first of all?
Well, thank you, first of all, for inviting me. So I consider myself a fronteriza, a child of the border, right? My family originally lived in Sunland Park for some time. And then we moved to Canotillo. So I've spent a lot of my formative years in Canotillo, you know, high school and all through college, I lived in Canotillo. Since then, I have moved around. And that's why I really do consider myself like a product of the region, because I've lived in Las Cruces and I lived in El Paso and various areas all the way to Deming. And so finally, life has brought me back to Sunland Park in sort of a full circle. And that's where I live now. But yeah, I consider myself definitely a fronteriza.
And for those who do not know, Sunland Park is really an adjacent town. I mean, you cross a street in one direction, El Paso, and you're already in Sunland Park. So it's very, very close. The terrain is basically the same.
Yes.
The geography is basically the same.
Literally, the lot in back of my house is Texas. Yes. So that's how close we are. And so what brought me to La Semilla and food systems work was really also a personal journey for me in thinking about my health and where I was. It really started around college. I knew nothing really about food systems work, but I had gained a lot of weight, and there was a period where I was really questioning myself and my self-worth because of my body image. And so I know that I had spent some time thinking about my mom and my tias and what they look like in the pictures that I had seen, and knew that, like, I did not represent what they looked like at that time. And I started to ask myself, why? Like, why is it that, you know, my mom and my tias were very thin, right, at my age, and I was gaining weight exponentially at a very early age. And so, or maybe not exponentially, but significantly. And I started to do research and thinking about health. At the same time, my aunts and my moms were starting to get older. So they were also starting to gain weight and started to experience some health-related issues that were diet-related. And so that really fueled me and motivated me more to really start thinking about how we could really start integrating healthy practices into our family. And then my tío had a heart attack, which was devastating for all of us. I think it was like the first time somebody in our family had experienced something to that level of trauma. And it just really reinforced that we needed to make some changes. And just like serendipitously, La Semilla came along, and there was a job posting for a school garden coordinator position with La Semilla. And so I applied because I knew that that was a place where I could potentially learn more about this journey that I was on. And so now...
And when was this?
This was about 2010. And something that I recall, like, I didn't think ever that I was going to be chosen. But I had some community-based outreach and community engagement experience with another organization. And so that's really, I think, what I guess they were looking for too in someone, right? So yeah, that's definitely what brought me to La Semilla.
So you started in 2010. That's almost 12 years ago in La Semilla. For those of us who might not know anything about La Semilla, can you tell us a little bit about what the organization stands for, maybe a little bit of its history? I know that it has a lot of components, and one of them is like a farm. And you know, like where does the land for the farm came from? But just give us a little brief history. A little bit of the history of what La Semilla Food Center is, and what its mission and visions are.
Okay, yeah. So La Semilla was founded in 2010, and it was co-founded by Christina Dominguez Eshelman, Aaron Sherritt, and Rebecca Reinhard Wiggins. Christina Dominguez is the only co-founder who's still with the organization. She's an executive director with the organization now. And so the mission for La Semilla Food Center is to create a more healthy, self-reliant, sustainable, and fair food system in the Paso del Norte region.
So how do I mean, that's a wonderful a goal and vision to have, the notion of fair food systems. How does Semilla define what a fair food system is?
Well, a fair food system is one that not only is producing food for the sake of, getting it out to the masses, it's also thinking about the people who are producing the food. It's thinking about the environment and the toll that it's taking on the environment and how that impacts also the climate. It's thinking about who has access to that food, right, and what quality of food is being produced. The food that is being produced, does it represent the diverse nutritional needs of the people who are purchasing that? It means making sure that the people who are growing the food have economic opportunities to make a living off of the food that's being produced. It's making sure that women also are included in as part of that system, and that the barriers that exist are being addressed, and that we are empowering people to be able to grow and be in community.
I know that one of the components that the Semilla has is actually a farm. It literally has a farm. Last time we spoke, you mentioned how did this land came to be part of this farm. Can you tell us about that relationship?
Absolutely. So the land that we have as part of the community farm was donated to us from Sierra Vista Growers, and it was 15 acres in total. Of that, we have usually about 1 to maybe at most 2.5 to 3 acres in production per year. It really is an education demonstration site. More than anything, we do, like I said, produce some food, and that goes back out to the community through our Farm Fresh program and multiple outlets, like our programs where we give away the fresh fruits and vegetables that we're growing. But really, it's more of a place for people to come together and learn.
Okay, that brings me then to the question of two questions. Okay. Do you garden? I mean, do you have a cultivation year round? And if so, what are the different kinds of plants, vegetables that you garden? Another question is, who does the work? Because I know that the people come and work, but how does that process happen?
Yeah, so we do have production year round, although we also very intentionally create spaces for the people who are working at the farm or staff to take some time during, especially the winter months when production tends to be lower. Although, like I said, we do produce throughout the winter also.
So people who work at the organization are also the ones who are quote unquote farming or cultivating. That's one group. But I understand that you have, the program has kind of a number of fellowships or mm-hmm. internships in which people from the communities come and work. So how does that process work?
Right. So, yeah, in addition to we have our farm manager, our Actually, our executive director is also the co-director for the farm. We have a farm assistant working. I just want to make sure to name all the people who are working there. So it's Josh, Christina, and Luis, and Julieta, who is also the program assistant. But we also have, like you mentioned, we have a group of fellows last year for the first time working out there, also learning how to produce food sustainably through agroecological practices. And there was 10 of them who were out there learning, but also lending a hand in the production. We also have Raices Youth who are out there. Less so during COVID, we had a lot less people out there, but you know, in regular years, we do have the youth out there also learning, and as part of that, it's all hands-on, and so they're also, you know, planting seeds, helping to maintain irrigation lines, and you know, harvesting, doing everything hands-on, and also learning. And we have summer camps out there. We also have like school groups on occasion, and we've had them in the past. Yeah, it's really a community effort.
Right. I know that you, well, I think I know this, that your specific role is with educational aspect. So that's sort of what you lean to. And I want to talk to that to you about more specifically about what does that involve and how it's connected to the schools, I would imagine. But before that, you just mentioned a particular process in which the cultivation goes, a system they use. I think it's called
agroecology?
Is that what you call it?
Yes.
Agroecology? Okay. Can you tell us a little bit what agroecology is?
Right. So agroecology is it's a method of production, but it's also a movement. As a method of production in practice, it represents or holds the skills of soil health or seed saving, water preservation, planting through cultural traditions and methods that have been used historically by our ancestors. As a movement, it also represents environmental justice, food justice, climate justice, gender justice. And so it's really in keeping with the natural integrity of the connection between food and the people who are growing it.
Well, one thing that I was very fascinated when we were visiting at the farm, I think it was in December, is that you showed me how the irrigation structure that you guys have there, instead of being this thing that just throws water into the air, you have this hose almost buried underneath, right? And the logic of that is to save water, to...
Yes, yes. So it's drip irrigation. And so it's really important to acknowledge that the drip irrigation system that we have at the farm and that we use when we're out in community, right, and teaching people about using water sustainably in our region is with the intention of preserving as much water, because we live in drought conditions most of the year. And that system allows for the percolation of water to be as close to the ground as possible, right? And drip into the places that are closest to the plant. So it allows so that there's no pooling of water and that there's no evaporation, or there is some evaporation naturally, but there's much less evaporation that happens as a result of drip irrigation compared to flood irrigation, which is very common in our region.
Mm-hmm. Right. One other question about farming, and then we're going to talk more specifically about the educational programs you have. You just mentioned something a minute ago about one of the ways in which you try to cultivate is more indigenous process. For our guests, to understand the difference that we're talking about here, when I hear more indigenous, I'm thinking immediately about monoculture versus diversity, biodiversity. Is that what I'm hearing you when you talk about indigenous practice? What does that mean versus something that it might not be?
Yes, that's one of the things that is a more accurate representation of how our ancestors used to produce food, right? And you know, in the past, they needed to produce food for a household, and that meant producing a variety of foods. And so at the farm, we're not growing one thing, which is what you would typically see in a monoculture where there's only, you know, chile or, you know, a whole field of onions or, you know, a whole field of just one thing growing out there. It's important that we make the distinction, because by creating a diversity of different food that's growing in one place, you're promoting a more natural system like we see in nature that has more balance. And just a simple example, right? If you're growing kale, aphids is a pest that loves kale. And so you'll see a plague or a plaga, right? And then what the tendency would be, right, in a more conventional system is to spray it with some sort of pesticide or something chemical. But if you create a more natural balance system at a farm, like we have at our farm, and there's biodiversity, then yes, there's still going to be some insects. But you won't see the same type of infestation, because you have lettuce, you have carrots, you have other seasonal produce that's growing. And so that helps to reduce the tension on the plants and keep them healthy. And when they're healthy, we can eat them and stay healthy ourselves too.
And I suspect that kind of system of biodiversity also helps provide nutrients to the soil, right? Because my understanding is that monoculture, one of the things that it does is that it does deplete the soil for nutrients. So this process of having a multitude of things growing allows for the soil to regenerate itself, so to speak.
Yeah. Just like, you know, people, you know, certain fruits or vegetables tend to leach out different types of nutrients, right? Like different minerals and vitamins from the soil to produce, right? And so if one plant is really heavy and intensive on a certain mineral, then that the soil essentially becomes depleted from that, and it's also reduced in organic matter. So then that's why you see a lot of conventional producers having to fertilize their soil with like nitrogen, like chemical synthetic nitrogens. An agricultural or more sustainable system, like you see at the community farm, there's different ways that people do this, but the way that we do it is by creating compost and integrating pesticide-free compost, by adding organic materials back into the soil, by planting cover crops that pull nitrogen from the atmosphere back into the soil, and also rotating our crops actually too. So we're not growing in the same place all the time, and we also change what we're growing in those fields so that we give the opportunity, we give the soil an opportunity to restore itself, and we're giving it a little bit of an extra hand too.
That's great. Let's shift the topic a little bit, just a little bit, because I'm sure that growing food is part of what you do. But I understand that your specific role is to work as a educational coordinator. Tell us what your title is and what is it that you have been mostly focusing on in this organization, in La Semilla.
So my title is the Community Education Program Director. And my specific role has been focused on taking the programs that we had early on through our schools and through the farm and taking them out into the community. And so really reaching the people where they're at, right? So we have a program called La Cosecha, and that program actually has I'm sure there's better language, but like a subset of services that we offer to community members and partner organizations. So It has a program called the Cultiva Institute, where we're training community-based organizations and different types of groups to start their own community garden. We teach them how to design, plan it. We provide some basic gardening skills. We also do a whole day on nutrition and cooking education from an ancestral wellness lens, because we feel like it's really important that people know what all of the education that we're teaching, what it's rooted in, and that they also know what to do with the food that they're growing. I mean, I also want to say that people know how to cook, right? And a lot of us have an inherent sense of knowledge of what's good for us. But sometimes when, you're in a community garden setting and you're growing a whole bunch of new fruits and veggies, like, there, you might need some new ideas.
You mentioned two things that I would like to elaborate a little bit more on. One is this ancestral techniques or ancestral ways of cooking. Can you define what that means in terms of the work that you're doing? And also, where are these community gardens in either Las Cruces or El Paso? Where do we find them?
Right. So so ancestral wellness, we think about that as, the traditions. You could simply say, like, the traditions of our abuelas or our great grandma, right? In some cases, because we're so far removed at this point from those traditions, pre-industrial, but also pre-Columbian, right? And thinking about more of our heritage foods that came before the advent of highly processed foods, right? And the colonization of our foods. And so we really think about our ancestral foods as a source of well-being, and also want to say that our foods today have been villainized. Mexican foods, the foods here of the borderland especially, have been colonized, but also the foods sometimes that we just characterize as Mexican, right, in the United States have been villainized. But a lot of that has been a product of colonization. And so our heritage foods were very healthy, and they kept our ancestors very, very, very nourished. And so,
This reminds me, sorry for interject here, but I have to share this personal story. Many years ago, I wrote a book and I gave a presentation, and it's about Mexican stories, women who cook and so on and so forth. Anyway, somebody asked a question after the presentation of this book that I published many years ago, Voices in the Kitchen, in which it features my mother as one of the stories that I gather. Anyway, somebody asked a question about issues of health and diabetes and how unhealthy Mexican diets are and so on and so forth. Before I had a chance to answer, my mother answered. And she said, but wait a minute. If you're really thinking about Mexican, and for her, she meant also kind of like what you're saying, more indigenous kind of ways. She said, if you're really thinking about Mexican food, it's really healthy. You have your nopalitos, you have your verdolagas. So she started mentioning foods that are actually native even here in El Paso, right? I mean, in the farm in La Semilla, you have a garden that is a Chihuahuan garden. But I think is that sort of what you're talking about? It's not so much returning to the past, but remembering.
Right.
Somebody said something that cooking is not a talent, but a memory.
Yes. And it's also thinking about our food as a source of pride and connection, and that we don't have to be ashamed of, when we enjoy a tamal, which often, we hear like, oh, tacos or tamales, they're so bad for you, which they can be if you think about them, if you think about them the way that they were made or transformed because of that colonization, right? Because the high fats that we have in our foods are represented sometimes more and more like Mexican-American or Tex-Mex types of foods. Those were introduced by the Europeans, those elements that really shifted and changed the nutritional profile of our heritage foods. All the like high cheese that we see in our foods, but they're still very traditional very typical ways that we can prepare these foods in our homes with love, care, that are in keeping with health. You know, our frijolitos de la olla, just shifting away from like using certain, you know, high content or very highly processed fats, which fat in itself is not evil, right? It's only when we like consume it in high proportions. And so it's just really shifting and thinking through how we're nourishing our bodies and eating in more holistic ways that represent our traditions, our traditions and roots.
And certainly one way to change your diet in a more quote-unquote healthy way, it's gardening. So let's go back to this community gardens. What does the partnership look like? Who are you partnering with?
So it looks different on any given year, but usually we have requests from different types of community groups. For example, we worked with NMCU's Child Development Institute. I can't remember specifically the name of the program itself, but it was a specific program at NMCU that we worked with last year. They went through our Cultiva training. We also have groups like Esperanza's Project Vida, who are interested in, we've had requests right now for them to participate in our Cultiva Institute. We also recently have been working with Catholic Charities of Southern New Mexico, who has also requested some training around starting a community garden. We ourselves don't have a community garden. We do have a small demonstration site that we keep at the office in preparation for education. It used to be used by community members in Anthony, but then they participated in our classes and we gave them a whole bunch of gardening supplies to take home and they started growing at home. We've partnered with Vista del Valle Community Garden to do education there and also provide some training and support for them. So it looks different on different years, but really the role there is to provide more a resource, to be a resource to the groups who are interested in starting their own community garden groups.
Ever since I got here 20 years ago, close to where I live, there are three empty lots, and I remember thinking, wouldn't it be great to convert one of that into a community garden? I haven't done anything in 20 years, okay? But if I was interested with a group of members within my community, my neighborhood, of developing something like a community garden, whether it's in this lot or even in our own volunteering, our own backyards, front yards, is La Semilla a place that we can approach to help us, guide us as to how to even begin this process? Because I would not know how to have an idea how to do a garden that has the intention of sharing the food with community members.
Yes, that's what our Cultiva Institute is set up to do, right? Just to get those leaders, the people who have that vision, prepared to be able to bring together a group of people to plan and vision what their community garden is going to look like, to really think through, you know, all those critical pieces that are needed. Also, there's all sorts of different types of community gardens out there, right? There's not one way to do it. And so really pinpointing what purpose is my community garden going to serve? And then, again, providing some of those gardening skills and food safety training if needed. As a part of that, because bringing people and creating community around a community garden space is so important, we also have our cooking and gardening pláticas that we take to different colonia communities throughout the region. And that is also a way for us to create community around those community garden spaces. They don't have to happen in partnership with the community groups that we work with, but we try as much as possible to put together those two components so that they're supporting each other. So, you know, you have the community garden leaders trained and prepared, and then you're also creating a base of support from the community garden through those classes.
It sounds like a combination of the hands-on of gardening and the knowledge of what to do with what you're cultivating. It's a really great connection. So it's not only just the theory or the practice, but it's also, you know, the community. And it sounds like the whole idea of community, bringing people together, is central to La Semilla. Am I correct with that assumption?
Yes, yes. That is an integral part of what we're doing. We're creating spaces for people to come together to share knowledge, because we acknowledge that we are not the only ones who are holding on to these practices and these traditions, right? And so we have a lot to learn just as much as the people who participate. And so by creating these spaces, we are strengthening the work that we're doing in the region and bringing people together. We don't want to do this work alone.
That reminds me of another component of La Semilla, which is something connected to storytelling. How does that work?
Well, the storytelling program, that is one of our newest programs. Primarily, we are reframing the narrative, taking back, so to speak, right? Like reclaiming a lot of the stories that have been told about our communities. Just like I mentioned earlier about, you know, tamales and, you know, and also the people who are doing this work, many of the times our stories are told by other people, white, male, colonizers, and it is part of the work that we're doing to take back our story and also frame it in a way that celebrates our traditions and our histories, so that it can play a role in, you know, removing some of those barriers, be it policy, be it systemic change or nutrition education, you know, whatever it is, it's a way for us to be able to have a story to tell that really brings back the integrity of our roots.
So early on, we started this conversation with the idea of food justice, and you gave us an interesting definition or component of what the multiple layers that really means. As I'm hearing you share your experience with La Semilla, I'm hearing a couple of things. I'm hearing the practice, the taking care of the land, learning how to plant, learning different ways of cooking, but also that a lot of this knowledge is part of the community already. It is just the Semillas, maybe like a platform or a setting, a center in which these things come together. Are these things coming together for some, is that policy change or policy efforts that the Semilla also engages with? Because a lot of this we can change at the personal level, but if you really are working with trying to change the food systems or create more food systems, policy needs to come in place. Is that something also that is part of the Semilla goals?
Yes. So we also have a policy and community development program, and that's led by Victoria Quevedo. She's our policy director. And so it absolutely does address the fact that we don't believe that the individual behavior change is going to be the only thing that is needed. Like thinking about that story, right, that I shared earlier about how I thought, well, what am I doing wrong? Why am I gaining weight? But I didn't really understand at that point in my life that really there was a whole system that was in place that was designed for the profits of the few, and that it was also depriving me of those heritage foods that, you know, I mentioned earlier. And having them as a nutritional basis for every day. So why is that? What's happening? What why am I not being able to access that very nutritious and healthy tortilla that had nixtamal in it, right? And I'm thinking when I go to the grocery store that the tortillas that I buy are the same. And really, there's a whole system behind why the foods that are in our stores are so highly processed. And that's because there are companies who are very small amount of companies, right, who are being supported essentially by the government through policies so that they can produce large amounts of wheat and corn and subsidize, right, to fill our shelves with these unhealthy foods. It also excludes the people who are trying to grow food sustainably, who are trying to make a living off of farming, growing, who are people of color, who are Black and Indigenous people of color, who have also been exploited, right? And so there's all of these policies historically that have made it, historically and today, that continue to make it okay for the system to prevail.
Yeah, when we think about the policy system, I mean, as you're talking about corn and tortillas, there's one organization, and I'm desperately trying to remember the name of it, and I can't at the moment. There is actually a Mexican company that fundamentally produces just about all the tortillas that we eat everywhere, regardless of the brand. The brand might be different, but the process is the same, and the same company is behind it. But I also think that it is important to remember this other more personal or grand level, the grand level things that people do, like the gardening, because we got to start somewhere. So I like the idea that the semilla really sort of not necessarily compartmentalizes, but is looking at multiple ways in which to address changes to the food system, because not every individual is going to be able to involve with issues of government policy, but there's still things that we can do to eat a little bit different or to have a broader knowledge of how food comes about. The last question I have is, we cover a lot of things. We cover your relationship and how that's changed in your time with the organization, La Semilla. If people wanted to get involved, how do they go about learning more? Did they just visit your website? Should they call you? How can people get involved or learn more about La Semilla?
To get involved with La Semilla, you can reach out to me or any of our staff. We're on Facebook, or social media, Instagram. My email is marlene@lasemillafoodcenter.org. But really, yeah, just reach out to one of us through social media or directly. You can also call our office. We'll find a way. We'll find a way to plug you in. Like you mentioned, we have a lot of programs and a lot of ways for people to engage. And so if it's not as a participant, we have student interns and volunteer opportunities. Right now, because of the pandemic, we're still limiting the way that volunteers can engage. But hopefully in the future, that will pick up again. And if it's something that's more like hands-on that people are wanting, you know, in getting their hands in the soil. But we also have the fellowships right now that are starting. And so we're, that just currently closed, but that program, what that looks like currently is that they're going to be hiring for another cohort of fellows who are going to be out at the farm for 6 months. Training on agroecological practices. Okay. Yeah.
So people can just reach out to you through social media, which makes it great. Before we close, is there anything else about the organization, about gardening, about anything that you would love to mention that we have not addressed yet?
There's so many ways, right? I think a lot of people get tied up in thinking that getting involved and making a change in local food systems has to be this perfect thing, right? But there's a lot of ways to make small impacts when it comes to local food systems, and whether it's eating more fruits and vegetables or starting a little plantita in your your windowsill with herbs and, you know, some of those remedios caseros that our grandma used to teach us. Like, it, you know, there's just a lot of ways that you can reconnect to healthier food systems. And so, you know, don't get discouraged. It's a long process. And this work is going to take a village, so to speak. And we have started to see changes in our region in over the last 10, 15 years, and people wanting and seeking to return to their roots. And so it's coming. The change is coming.
Great. Well, thank you again. And I will be reaching out to you guys. I'll be reaching out to you guys to maybe start this dream that I thought about 20 years ago and feel, look about, explore how to do a community garden where I live, and figure out who we can give that food to, share that food with when once we cultivate it. So once again, thank you very much for coming. Our guest today, Merlin Janes from La Semilla Food Center. Thank you for sharing the history of this organization and the way to, for us to get involved. It's been a pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
El Paso Food Voices was created by Meredith E. Abarca, Professor of Food Studies and Literature at the University of Texas at El Paso. Produced by Adrian Mesa from UTEP's Creative Studios. Music composed by Jade Jacobs. To learn more about how food practices, memories, and stories shape a city's history, culture, and its character, please visit us at El Paso Food Voices. Thank you.